invite you again together, and let's pray. Lord our God, you have given us your word for our edification. We've heard your word this morning read to us. Bless us with understanding of your word, and make anything that I say in terms of commentary be acceptable to you, and broaden and help us and enliven us. And may all the meditations of our hearts from these words and the changes that take place in our souls be acceptable to you, who are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Wasn't planning on doing this, but I want you to you can look at it again or just think about this. Our confessional prayer. In there, it's got a couple of interesting expressions. Our division, because we're not gathered together. The rush of a spirit. Spirit that burns with fire. You know that one? You've read it. You understand that, what that means. Keep that in mind as we continue, please. Because I have a question for you. And I ask a lot of questions when I get up behind the pulpit. And sometimes I actually want an answer. And I'll go, now what color is the sky? Finally, I get an answer. Sometimes you don't. You got to palm people. But now, I have for you a rhetorical question. And I want you to think about, because I'm going to answer, what is the biggest trial for the church today? I'll answer. If you have an answer, good. I'd like to hear it. Afterwards, come and tell me what your answer is, because I want to know. But think that the church, capital C church, every denomination you can think of, including a snake handlers on there, the church. But you dare, if they're considered to be Christians, even a little bit on the not-so side, but how many things do y'all as Lutherans and we as Presbyterians, other people think are a little out there? But I'm not about to stand up here and say, well, you know, you guys aren't Christians because you don't follow the Heidelberg Catechism. Actually, do you have a Heidelberg Catechism? No? Well, y'all aren't Lutherans, huh? Every Lutheran has a Heidelberg Catechism. But what's the biggest problem that all of us face? Most Christians, as individuals, have the same problem. Because the problem of the church today is both individual and corporate. If you thought when I asked that question, the biggest problem the church has today is the prosperity gospel. Who knows what that is? Anybody? Just raise your hand and tell me what that is. Okay, Tony, if you didn't, I'd be really disappointed. The prosperity gospel is, a preacher who gets up there and says, folks, I need you to send me $65 million so I can buy a new airplane to serve you better. You know that? You heard that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real one. And you got people who say, you send me $1,000, I guarantee by the end of the year you'll get $10,000 back. You've heard that one too, right?
Recently.
Yeah, you turn the TV on Sunday morning, or one of those out there kind of stations, you're going to hear people say that. But these prosperity preachers, they are a problem, but they are not the problem. Another guy who is now no longer living, and I won't tell you his name, but he founded a university in Oklahoma, and he's really famous. And he once said in February, people, if you don't send me $8 million by the end of the year, God's going to call me home. Yeah.
I was working in hospice at the time and sent him a letter telling him to
save him a death. There you go. Don't you hear that? Tony said that he was working in hospice. And he sent him a letter telling him he'd saved him a bed. I never, when even when that was happening, I didn't understand it, because what is a Christian's greatest goal is to go home, right? Well, he raised $9.1 million, so God didn't call him home then. He did later. But these pie-in-the-sky preachers, they are a problem, but they are not the problem. And then you've got these preachers who smile all the time. I have one particularly in mind, but I won't mention him, but my son and I call him Mr. Fishhooks. Because it looks like somebody put a fishhook in each corner of his mouth and tied him over his ears. He's always smiling. He gets up there and he says, you know, in the Middle East today, 45,000 people were killed. There's some newscasters like that too, but if you look closely at those people who do that, and you look here, they're not smiling with their eyes. It really is like they've got facials pulled back. Some people say I don't smile enough, and maybe I don't, but I smile when I'm supposed to. But if you look in the eyes, you can tell what's going on. Now, all these people are problematic, and we have problems with them. But then you got the women. You know the women I mean? Oh, yeah, you're not one of them, Jane. And I didn't know you that far back. So, were you ever one of these women whose hair was this tall and had so much makeup on you needed a pick and shovel to get it off in the evening? Again, you know who I'm talking about. Or at least the type of person that I'm talking about. That isn't the problem, but that is a problem. Is that a good model for anybody, man or woman? No, it's not. Unfortunately, because these people have the platform, I keep moving this, because it keeps popping on me. I apologize, and I'm not sure why. But they've got this platform of televangelism, and millions of people see them. And they think, oh, that's what it is to be a Christian. Maybe somewhat, but not the way they live, not the way it presents. And those people who get up in front of a national TV audience and present the cause of Christ like that do no good whatsoever, and I think they do harm. Because what they do is people see those folks, and then they look at you and say, oh, what kind of person is that? But that's still not the main problem of the church today. The main problem with the church today, the church universal, is complacency. You might even say laziness. You can also throw in illiteracy. Because most people that are in churches today have never read the Bible. Or if they have, they don't understand what it says because they've not been taught properly. Complacency. And for most of us, we're just perfectly happy to sit back and ignore all this other stuff that's going on. Have you ever heard another preacher talk about something like I just did? Probably not, because they're afraid that somebody could talk about them like that. If somebody wants to talk about me and say I'm doing something wrong, if I know I'm doing it right, I don't care what they say. My son and I were having a text conversation this morning as he was getting ready to go to church, and one of the things that I said to him, I said, you know this. We call our son Jay, by the way, so we refer to him. Some of you know him. I said, Jay, you know this, but I'm going to tell you again. The list that you have of people that you care what they think about you should be really short. I think my list is 4. Seriously. Because as long as I speak God's word, I don't care what you think about me or what you think. Even what Tony thinks about me, if I know that I'm speaking something from God, I don't care what you think. Very few people. Unfortunately, we sit back and we really want to be accepted as a work of place. We don't say anything against all this bad stuff out there. These people are just stereotyped. And I did, I stereotyped them, so I apologize for that. But we're just guilty. We live out our days as everyday, ordinary people. And most folks can't tell the difference between a Christian and somebody who's not a Christian. We look like those people. We dress like those people. We act like those people. We talk like those people. We read the same books they do. We watch the same TV shows they do. We go to the same movies. We listen to the same music. Am I right? You all should be going like this. Otherwise, you're a liar or a nun or a priest. Cloistered. Does that mean we shouldn't watch somebody's TV shows, that we shouldn't read somebody's books? You know, some of them are kind of sketchy, but no, we live life. We live in the culture. We're not part of the culture. We need to participate in the culture. But how are we different from the people out there who don't know Jesus? How are we different? How are we supposed to be different? Now, I'm not getting on a bandwagon here saying, well, we all need to start a cult and we need to live all by ourselves so we can live out in the woods and follow what whoever says we should be. You know what happens to that, right? The Jim Jones kind of thing where everybody kills themselves. I'm not even saying we should be like the Amish. A lot of respect to the Amish. But they are essentially cloistered because they live in their own little world, denying kind of what's on the outside. And most people look at them and they scratch their heads and say, how can these people live like that? And how come they don't have buttons? Why do they lace things up with weird stuff? In his letter to Rome, Paul is talking. You might not see it, hopefully you will again, but Paul tells the people in Rome, and he tells us today too, that God knew his people in advance, and God chose them, and God called them that he chose to come to him, and having them come, God gives them glory. Why that? It's what it says. I paraphrase a little bit, but that's exactly what we read in Romans 8. That God calls us, we are God's, and we get God's glory. How many of you feel glory, or feel like glory, or look like glory, or exude God's glory? Well, probably none of us. Didn't know a woman named Glory, as a matter of fact. I still know her, she hasn't died, but she moved away. But her name was Glory, and when she introduced herself to me, I said, really? About the same time, met another lady, her name is Glee. So we had Glee and Glory. You know, what do you do with that? If God has called you, you have come to him, you have God's glory, and what do you do with it? Mostly nothing. Now, I might be picking on somebody who does go out there and show God's glory and do things. But in a group this size, I'm on pretty good statistical grounds that most of us do not use and show and give away God's glory to the world. When was the last time you demonstrated? Maybe last Sunday after the offering. We sing the doxology here, right? Now, the doxology is a compound word. It's two Greek words put together. Doxo and logos. Logos, or logos, means words, or words about. And doxo is glory. The doxology is giving words of glory back to God. Now, that's the only time you show God's glory. You're doing something wrong. And I am too. That's the only time I do it. Where were you out there in the world, Publix, Walmart, and you reacted and interrelated with somebody just being one of God's kids and being nice to them? I know every once in a while Andrew gets upset with me because I talk to everybody. You all know that I'm a terrible introvert. You figured that out, right? When you put me in a crowd of people, I just cringe. I talk to everybody. Sometimes it gets directly around to God, but other times it's just making a relationship. If you shop at Publix, and you go to same Publix all the time, like we do, and by the way, Andrew and I have both been shopping at Publix since 1967, so it goes back quite a ways. We know most of the cashiers at Publix, a lot of the bag boys, and all of the pharmacists. You go to the drive-up window to pick up a script, they don't even ask my name, and you just, you know, just a second, they go look for it. But those people you interact with, is that a word? Yeah, interact is the word, but you can't interreact, and maybe that's good too, because you are reacting to each other. These people that I know at Publix, I only know them as a customer. They're not friends, not really acquaintances, but they know something about me. I convey that to them. This isn't a great manifestation of God's power. I'm not parting the sea or calling down a tornado or fire or bringing back somebody from the dead. I'm just reaching out to somebody. Holding a door open when someone behind you let them come in. Or a smile when somebody's looking down. Or maybe sharing the gospel. Or possibly inviting somebody to church. The other day, I think it was Wednesday. Pretty sure it was Wednesday. My time sense gets messed up sometimes. I don't press something down particularly, I get lost. But I think it was Wednesday. We're going to say Wednesday. Someone I know, who knows that I've been here on occasion to help you lead worship and to preach to you. A couple of times, actually, they know that I've been here. Not just the one, so. Which is the fourth time here, I think, over the last couple of years? Yeah, four or five, something like that. Some of you I knew from before. I've met some of you here. So we have a relationship of some kind. It's not real deep. It might get that way someday, but right now we have a relationship. But they knew that I had that relationship. And they asked me a question. And this individual, they know this congregation situation, how you came to be, where you are, the fact that you know, you're between paths, all this kind of stuff, all the basic stuff. And from the knowledge of you folks, and the question, and it was an important question. I had to think about what was asked before I answered. And even during my answer to this person, I had to think about it. Now that might surprise some of you that I think. That's me that I think before I get asked a question, but I really do more often than not. If it's important, if it's light and airy, maybe not, but if it's important, I'll think about it. Anyway, this was, as I said, an important question. Getting ready for it? I will tell you the question, ready? It was an important question. Not so much for me as it is for you. And that's why I had to cogitate a bit on it. I didn't want to throw something answering for you from myself. You want to know the question that I was asked? Oh, yeah. Last night, I was sitting in my recliner, which is my usual spot in the evening, and I was drifting in and out of sleep sitting in the recliner. It was between like 7 and 8, and Andrew will tell you that was probably snoring. That's morning last night, my recliner. Yeah. But I was coming in and out of sleep. And during that in and out, I remembered this incident on Wednesday, being asked, and I said, well, do I really want to tell you what the question was? And I thought about it, and I said, yeah, okay, I'll tell the question. You want to know what it is, or I'm going to skip it? I can skip it and keep going. Okay, I was asked about you guyses and you galses, guyses and galses, all inclusive here, this congregation, I was asked my opinion, and asking for my opinion is something that can be dangerous, because if you ask me, I will give it. This is the question. Do they have a chance? The unspoken was to succeed as a church. That didn't need to be said because I knew it. Do they have a chance? And I stopped and I thought. And my first response was a very enlightened, huh? Not quite sure what was meant, but again, I thought about it. I needed to be a bit more eloquent, I think, than, huh? So I came up with an answer. I said, when it was asked, if you have a chance, yeah, they have a chance to succeed as a church, with two caveats. They all listen. Anybody not listening, raise your hand. You have to do two things. You have to know two things. You have to be two things. First, for this church to continue on, to have a chance to succeed as a Christian church, it has to be in God's will. That's the first thing. Because if you go against God's will, you know what? You're going to lose every time. And the second thing I said, and because of an answer, I said, they got to work at it. So today I say, you got to work at it. Again, I know that you have a new pastor coming, Dean just meant that again, and you probably have expectations about him, what he's going to do for your church. Well, that's your mindset. It's wrong, because this isn't your church. This is Christ's church. And if you start thinking, what's he going to do for my church, you've got something problematic. Now, again, if you have a coworker or a friend, and you say, how did you come to my church on a Sunday? That's okay. But if you think about it to yourself as my church, it's not. You need to change that. This is Christ's church. And you've got to work at it, being Christ's church. And I know all the answers you can give me. All these answers of avoidance that are out there are the ones that say, I can't because too old, too tired, too far, not smart enough, not dumb enough. All those are excuses. Paul, this is how it relates to us today. Paul had the same problem with, quote, his people in Rome. Probably most of whom we probably never met. But his people in Rome, they were afraid of stepping out into that pagan world of Rome and saying, I'm a Christian. Why don't you come to church with me and learn about it? And I bet that all the excuses they had for not doing that are similar to the ones that you can come up with. Sometimes there are reasons. They're few and far between. They're usually excuses. But, bottom line, anything that you tell me, if I say, any one of you, why don't you talk about Jesus? Why don't you invite people to church? And again, maybe some of you do. And you would say, well, I do. Those of you don't, every excuse you come up with comes down to one little four-letter word. And no, it's not evangelism. Well, it is evangelism, but that's a four-letter word, too. But all of your excuses come down to one word: fear. You're afraid. y'all know who FDR was? Frankie Domino Roosevelt? Wasn't it Frankie Domino? FDR. At his first inaugural speech. Yeah, I know, it's Franklin Delano. Did you know him personally? No.
But I was a fairy, didn't
he? He said this at his first inauguration. First of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. He's speaking to a country in the middle of depression between wars. Now, they didn't quite know that the second war was coming yet, but depression, wars. And he says, we can't be afraid, because really the only thing we have to be afraid of is being afraid. I don't know where he got those words. But you know what? Paul could have written that. You can take the section from Romans 8, and you can paraphrase it and break it down to what FDR said. And it'll be perfectly appropriate to you here in the church, to the church with a capital C at large. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Paul had no fear of anything. If you read the letters he wrote, if you read what happened in Acts, you know that Paul, he was afraid of anything. Now again, as I said earlier about jumping out of a plane with a parachute, there were times when Paul got out of town while the getting was good. He wasn't an idiot. But he was not afraid of anything. How about Rick Warren? You know who Rick Warren is? Well, Rick Warren claims, and I have no reason, I actually looked a little bit, and I have no reason to doubt this. Rick Warren says, in the Bible, God commands us to fear not in some form or fashion 365 times. Wow, how many days are there in a year? 365. You know, that command is the command that's given more often than any other. It's given more than love your neighbor. It's given more than come unto me. Do not be afraid. So why be afraid? At any time or anywhere. I will say that I'm not afraid of anything. So far, I've not found anything of which I've really been afraid. Just like I don't worry about anything. And that one's true. Don't believe me, you ask Andrew, it drives her nuts. Am I right? You know, I don't worry. I've seen what worry does to people. I just don't do it. I don't worry. If something's out there, that's a problem. If you can do something to fix it, fix it. If you can't, why worry about it? You can't do anything about it anyway. So, back to fear. Why be afraid of anything? There's no reason, because, again, Paul says, if God is for us, who can ever be against us? That's straight out of Romans 8. If you are one of God's called, if you are one of God's responding people, this is a great passage for Presbyterians, by the way. The whole calling and choosing things, and the predestination idea, but Lutherans hold to this kind of understanding as well, so I'm not off the reservation here. God is for those to whom he's called, who have responded, and to whom he's given his glory. Even if we have trouble, or calamity, or are persecuted, or hungry, or destitute, or in danger, or threatened with death, or have a house you've been trying to sell for 7 years in Texas. That's our problem. We have a house in Texas we've been trying to sell for 2010. It's all. And we don't know why. There's got to be a reason for it. And are we, quote, afraid it'll never sell? In that context, yes, it's concerned. But afraid? No. So out in that world that goes right through those double doors, you're going to run into people who don't know. I know I'm running long. One more real quick. This was this morning. Our son is in seminary in Jacksonville. And he and I had a text conversation this morning. I think I mentioned that already. But in there, he was telling me that he's got a bunch of buddies there that are with the PCA, the Presbyterian Church of America. They're one of the more conservative Christian denominations like ours. And the conversation came up, and they don't know anyone who isn't a Christian. I will say who is in church, because they're black people who go to church, they're not necessarily Christians. How many of you can say that? How many of you can honestly say that you have people who are friends who aren't Christians? Now, that's a real hazard for professional Christians like me, because all we ever do is do church stuff. You've got to step out of your box intentionally to meet non-Christians, to say, you need to join us over here. But we're afraid because we're not used to it. We're afraid. Because even if you have troubles or calamities or are persecuted or hungry or destitute or in danger, or even if you're threatened by death, yeah, show God's honor. Be who you are in this safe place out there. Now you tell me that's easy to say and hard to do. That's true. People called by God, people chosen by God, people who come to God. Be not afraid, regardless of what's going on, and show God's glory to the world. And you have a chance.